Welcome to the Arise Ministries podcast, where we exist to equip and encourage followers of Christ, teach God's word, share the gospel of Jesus, and leave a legacy of our Father's love. I'm Lisa DeSylvan. Today, we're picking up where we left off in our first interview with Rose Spears. If you haven't had a chance to listen to part one of Rose's story, you can find it on our website or iTunes at Arise Ministries Collective. We hope you are inspired as you hear Rose's testimony of God's incredible faithfulness.
So they have decided that they're going to go contact my dad's side of the family and let them know that our parents have been killed and that they have these 7 kids that we don't know what to do with them. And so they, I think a few weeks later, or maybe a month, months later, my dad's youngest brother showed up from another island.
And you've never met these people.
I have never met them. My relatives said a few years later, my relative says, "We've met you." But I don't remember. Mm-hmm. As a young child, I don't remember because my dad just kind of kept to themselves, us to themselves, you know, like he felt like his family has been kind of abandoned him. And so he decided he didn't want to be closer to them. So I never really knew. So when this man came to us, to where my grandma lives, said that I'm your dad's brother, we're like, are you for real? Or, you know, and my grandparents, my grandma, just believed him. And so we're thinking, okay. But he, when he found out that, you know, his brother had been killed, has died, that's when he came and he knew. I think he got the, back then you used the telegram. It was a telegram.
Yeah, a little note that people carried to each other.
That's what he got. And so right away he went to where my grandma lives, where we were. So he introduced himself and he found us there and left. And he came back a few weeks later with my dad's sister. And so anyways, then I had no idea what they were planning. Other than they were going to split us up because there's too many of us and they all have their own families and that no one could take all 7 of us. It would be hard financially and let alone putting us to school. So we got separated. 3 of my sisters, we got moved, transferred to another island where from my dad's side of the family, where my aunt lives. And then my brother and other siblings was, we left them at my grandma. At that moment, we were finishing, we were going to school. We had to finish our school year. And then later, once the school was out, one of my uncle went to go get my brother from, who was out there where my grandma lives. My brother and my sister, we took them and then took them back to the same island.
You went and got them.
My other uncle did.
Your other uncle came, went and got the 3 siblings that were still staying with your grandma and grandpa.
Yeah.
Up until that point, Rose, was there a time where you thought you would never see them again? Did your relatives tell you we're just separating you for a short time?
Well, I didn't know. No, nothing was really communicated to me. It just, other than we're going to have to separate you because none of us can take care of all of you, 7 of you. I didn't know when I was going to see my brothers and sisters. And as a young kid, as a young teenager, I just went with the flow.
Right.
I just went, I just did what's best for us and for me and for my brothers and sisters. I just want them to be safe and get taken care of.
But it must have been, like, how did it feel when your uncle said he was going to get them?
We were excited, me and my siblings, that, you know, we're like, okay, but he's not going to live with us. He wasn't going to be living with us. He was going to be living with my dad's dad, with my grandpa. which is a few hours away.
Oh.
But still, we're in the same island, the same city. But, you know, that's still closer than on the other side of the mountain. And because my mom's side of the family, they're more like farmers. So they live out in the mountain. Whereas my dad's side of the family, they're more like city people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have education, they're educated, and the life is different living in the city or living out in the mountain as a farmer. My grandpa actually is housed, he lives right near the ocean. So my brother gets to live with them and my other sister. We actually left one of my uncle left one of my sister with my grandma. So he only brought my brother and my other sister back mm-hmm. with him. Because my grandma's like, well, you need to at least keep one here.
She wanted one.
At least one. And then, so me and my two youngest sister, and we lived with my aunt, also my dad's brother, sister. So, you know, we were living, life is, I thought it's getting better.
How old were you? How much time had passed at this point?
Oh, it's not, all less than a year.
All
of this was happening less than a year. So as I was living with my aunt, this is going to be like a long process here, but my uncle Frank, who is a pastor in California, he goes back and forth to the Philippines.
So at this time, he's not living in the Philippines. He's a pastor.
In California.
This is your dad's brother. Okay.
He didn't know anything what had happened. Well, later on, one of my dad's brothers and siblings, they contacted him, my uncle in California, and said, do you know that your brother has, and his wife have been killed? And they left 7 children. Hmm. And that just broke his heart. And so he flew back to the Philippines and trying to find us. He was the one that helped us orchestrated all this. And at some point on one of his trip back to my mom's side of the family, he took me with him.
Just you?
Just me. And he said, I want you to show me where your grandma lives. I want you to show me where they are. So, and I did. So him and I, we took this, you know, trip. We got on this overnight boat from Cebu to mm-hmm. Cagayan. And then from Cagayan, we took the bus ride to the mountain, which is the town is called Damolog Bukidnon. And so we went there and we found my sisters mm-hmm. and brother. And this is how everything... And he kind of... I think he planned all of this out and... he's just trying to distribute, you know, making sure that all of us are being taken care of and not one family are being overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. As soon as he felt like, okay, Rose and the two younger sisters are here and the brother is there and, you know, brother and sisters and then a sibling still back in Damolog, then, okay, we're good, right? And so he went back to California. And for some point, I can't remember the timeline, but he came back to the Philippines and he said, okay, I made a guy, my friend, who is a missionary. His name is Roger Tompkins. I contacted Roger Tompkins, he's been a missionary in the Philippines. He works with some of the tribes out there. In the really remote places. And so he is a friend with the director of Paul and Marlis Healy, which are the director of the orphanage in Cebu City. So they met and somewhere my uncle came to visit me with my aunt at my aunt's house and said, I talked to my friend Roger and Roger referred me to this guy named Paul Healy who runs the orphanage in Cebu. We would like you to meet with him. And I'm like, okay, I don't know where this is going, but okay.
Because at this point, you're feeling like everyone's being taken care of, and mm-hmm. you're at least close enough to some of your siblings. Mm-hmm.
But deep inside, I was still confused. I was just didn't have the feeling of, I just wanted to be in a permanent home.
Together.
I feel like there's just missing. The puzzles has been blown away. Mm-hmm. And I just want this puzzle to end. You know, I just want this to be put together. Mm-hmm. And as an older sister, you don't get to see your siblings. It's hard because you don't know what they're doing day to day. You don't know if they're being taken care of. You don't know if you'll ever see them again. And so every day I would go to school and just, you know, just not in the right mind. But when my uncle came and said, I want you to meet Roger Tompkins, and I want you to meet the director of the orphanage. We met, we talked. I didn't really talk. I was kind of listening to all of their conversations. They were kind of making the plans for us. Then they all departed. They all went back to all their, whatever places they came from, right? And so I'm still back, and then I'm back to my aunt's house. And so then my uncle came again and said, there is an orphanage in Cagayan City, which is the same area where my aunt, where I was living with my aunt, but it's a few hours away the other direction. So we want you to go visit that orphanage. And but this orphanage, what they do is they have house parents. They would take all seven of us, and then they would put a house mom and dad in this house. But all the kids wouldn't be adopted. They would just stay there, live there until you grow up, until you're old enough to be on their own. That's the type of orphanage that was. They wanted me to go and observe and visit and see how I would like it. Right at that moment, I didn't feel connected. I didn't feel like that was a place for us.
When you went.
When I went to visit.
So you're there visiting.
So I told my uncle that I didn't know what to think of it. And then he said, well, I want you to go visit the orphanage in Cebu. Well, I got in this overnight boat and visited the orphanage. And as soon as I got there, there's this cute little girl. Not little girl, but same age as me. Like, she was she met me. Like, she, like, was so excited to see me as soon as I showed up into the orphanage. And she's like, I wish you would stay here. I wish you would live here and be my friend, you know. I think because of that, I felt at peace. Mm. And we got a tour in the orphanage. And my uncle pretty much just said, do you think you can see living here? Do you think you can live here with your brothers and sisters? At least you would all be in one place. You wouldn't be separated. You all be together. Now, this orphanage is, you know, they place kids for adoption.
If, so it wasn't the house parent kind. It was
there's two houses. I mean, yeah, there is still a house parents there, but they kind of run the whole, you know, there's like 67 kids, but they kind of run the whole orphanage, I mean, in one house. But the kids here, he said, the kids here will be placed for adoption. But we don't know if you guys will be adopted because there's so many of you. You're like the biggest in the history ever, I've ever. The family have ever come to this orphanage. And so we don't know of who in the world will adopt all seven kids. It's like, okay, well, I don't want to be adopted. I want to stay here. I think this is where I want to be. I think this is where I want to take my brothers and sisters is at this orphanage. Because I felt the connection. Mm. And I felt like they have aunts and uncles, which is the staff, the workers. Mm. They just would take care of you. And my uncle said, no, this is a Christian orphanage. I go, okay, whatever that means. Okay. But I think it's because through this day, I met that girl. Hmm. Her name is Nelia. She's so funny. But then, she could become my best friend, even through this day.
Even to this day. Mm-hmm. Nelia. Mm-hmm. Nelia so is your, and you met her at
she's
13.
Yeah, in the orphanage. And we've been friends ever since. So I told my uncle that I want to be in the orphanage. But I was scared to death. Mm-hmm. I was nervous. All the unknowns I was scared of. But, you know, I just wanted to have a place for all of us to be together. And if that was the place, then at that moment, that was the right thing. My uncle had asked to my mom's, I mean, my dad's sister and a cousin to accompany us on this overnight boat. From Cagayan to get to Cebu, you gotta be on a boat overnight. At that time, that was the only sort of transportation, unless you take a plane, but even then, it's way too expensive. So we got on this overnight boat, and all seven of us, accompanied with my cousin and my aunt. This boat is, you know, they have different kinds of bunk beds where you just pick your spot, mm-hmm. and then you just mm-hmm. lay there until morning comes. And so that night when I was in that boat, I just couldn't sleep. And I just kept thinking, you know, I was just like looking down and looking at my brothers and sisters. I'm thinking, it's so sad. I felt like I was thinking, I hope I'm making the right choice mm-hmm. for them. And I don't know where we'll end up. And but at that moment, I felt like maybe this is the right thing. And as they were laying there sleeping on this in the boat, and I just felt bad for them. I just had this. I've always been like, I always think I'm like, I'm a mean sister.
You are.
I'm a mean sister.
I can't picture it.
So for just that one moment when I was looking at my brothers and sisters sleeping, and I just felt this huge compassion. And anyways, I'm crying. I just felt this compassion for them, and I didn't even care what would happen to my life. I just want them to be cared for. It was there that I was on that boat, and I was just praying, and I was asking that, you know, I said, God, if you're real, you're gonna have to do something, because I don't know where to go from here other than the orphanage. I don't want the orphanage to be just our life. And I pretty much just, I've never said a prayer before. And I just pretty much, you know, I was just looking at the calmness of the sea and the stars. And I was just looking up in the sky, and I said, if you're real, you're going to have to do something for us mm-hmm. because I can't take care of all of them. And I just want them to be safe. And, you know, and I said, you're going to have to reveal yourself. One of my prayer was like, I've never prayed before, but whoever you are, if you're out there, you know, you're going to have to do something. I don't know why you took away my parents. And look, we're all stuck. And all these people are trying to help us. All these people are trying to find a way for us. And you took away my parents, you know. So I was just, I kept saying, you took away my parents. And you better have something for us, you know. I guess I was kind of expressing my anger, mm-hmm. my feelings, and morning came and we arrived to our destination. And when we got to the we all got to the orphanage, and we were welcome. They welcomed us like no one else. And but of course, you know, and my brothers and sisters just got along really well. They felt like we have some kids to play with, and we have the workers, the staff, they were so kind, and they just loved us and cared for us. And meals were provided 3 times a day, you know, and they put us to school. It was good, and the orphanage has been really, really good to us. And we were in the orphanage for almost 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Which is shorter than most kids. And so we're just going on with life. I went to school. My brothers and sisters went to school. And my house parents, we were required to go to church. But I'm like, okay, we're going to go to church. And my house parents were pastors at a church there in the city somewhere. And we all go to church. We have this van, and we all get in the van, and we all go to church. And so as a teenager, I was, you know, you go through your own little stubbornness in life. And I didn't like that they made me go to church. And I didn't like that they made me involved. They made me do things I didn't want to do. And so to make life easier, I'm like, okay, if you leave me to, okay, I'll go to church, you know. But it wasn't until one day that someone at the church asked me when my birthday was. When were you born again? I had no idea what that meant. And I said, I was born on October 5th. You know, I'm like, oh, and then I was like, I was born October 5th, 1975, you know, and they're like, oh, you became a Christian? That, wow. I said, oh, no. So I was really confused. They were throwing all these words to me about being born again, and I have no idea, but I was so embarrassed, so I wanted to just pretend. So, oh, no, no, never mind. So I was making up dates for my... And then, but you know, I just keep going on with life thinking I know what I was talking about, and I was just so prideful. I didn't want to just give up what I didn't know, you know, I didn't want people to know. And so it wasn't until one day that the house parents of the orphanage, so every year they have this festival in the Philippines where everybody just would parade on the road and just, a lot of the Catholics, they would parade on the road and they would celebrate Mary.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we couldn't go to church because the road was all blocked. And so we had to stay home and have church at home. And I'm like, well, this is kind of weird, you know. But I just didn't know any better. So they, but one day the house parents just talked to us about the, he talks about the book of the Revelation, about the second coming of Christ. Even though I was going to church, I was happy. I had a good life. But when I'm by myself, that's when I find myself thinking, there's something missing. There is something, something's missing in my life. And I didn't know what it was. I never knew. I didn't know. And I thought, oh, maybe I just need to get involved. So I got involved in the church. But, you know, that made me happy. But there's still something missing. So one day when my house parent talked about the second coming of Christ, and I think she just scared me off to death, but she said that if you don't accept Christ now, you're going to go to hell. I said, oh, no. So then I kept thinking, am I going to hell or am I going to heaven? How am I going to get to heaven? How am I going to get to hell? You know, like I have all these questions. And so anyways, she just talked in a gentle way, in a nice way. He preached the word, and he pretty much just said, you know, you gotta own your faith. You have to make the decision on your own. Mm-hmm. We can help you pray, but you have to do that on your own. You cannot. They said you cannot go on in this world living somebody else's faith. Because I am a Christian, because I believe in this, I believe in that, does it mean that's the same thing for you? I said, you know. But by then, being in the orphanage for 2.5 years, I've heard a lot of talks. I've heard a lot of preaching. We would do devotions every night because the orphanage is a Christian organization based in the headquarters in Minnesota. And so I memorize scriptures through Awana. I love Awanas. Mm-hmm. I learn all my verses through Awanas. But I thought I was a good person then, and I thought I was going to go to heaven because I did all of that. But it wasn't until one day that, you know, when they gave that talk about the second coming of Christ, that how if you do not have Christ in your relationship, if you do not have a relationship with Christ, that is not going to take you to heaven, no matter how much wonderful things that you do in this world. No matter how much involved you are in this church, it's that having that relationship with Christ, you know, is the most important thing. And I'm thinking, what is that? What is having a relationship with Christ means? What does that mean, you know? She explained to me how Christ died on the cross for you. He died on that cross for your sin. And he said that, how would you feel being on that cross? I said, I don't want to be on that cross. I've seen pictures that they're being crucified, you know, like, I don't want to be on that cross. And said, well, Christ did that for you because he loved you. And then she was throwing me this verse about John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that those whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. And I go, what does that mean? You know? So she explained that to me. I said, okay, I get it. I understand. And so, anyways, at the end of that sermon, I gave my life to Christ. Mm. And it was just, I don't know how. I was sitting there praying, and I just felt like this weight in my shoulder just dropped. And I just felt very light, very, I could sense the Holy Spirit just stripping me off, all putting all the new me, you know, getting rid of all the old me, and just helping me become a new person.
This concludes our second segment of Rose's story. Her incredible testimony will continue next month on the Arise Ministry Collective podcast as we hear more about God's faithfulness through Rose's journey. Thanks for tuning in.